With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. A study says that production costs are rising for Central Coast broccoli and lettuce. The cost of producing broccoli and romaine lettuce hearts has gone up in the Central Coast region. That's according to new studies released by the University of California Cooperative Extension. Researchers say that rising expenses for labor, custom farming, and other inputs, as well as land rents, continue to impact growers' bottom lines. The cost studies were based on interviews with area growers and are intended as guidelines for farmers as they develop their budgets. The studies say growers need good yields to just break even on cool season vegetables. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. Agriculture groups send a letter to the presidential candidates on boosting trade. Major U.S. agricultural organizations sent letters to all 2024 presidential candidates asking them to prioritize trade. The letters encourage each candidate to prioritize new market access trade agreements to help strengthen U.S. ag and decrease reliance on China. Brian Keel, executive director for Farmers for Free Trade, says while the U.S. has been inactive in looking for new trade opportunities, other countries have been busy.
In the past 10 years, China has entered into dozens of free trade agreements, and the EU is entering into free trade agreements. Our allies and our adversaries alike are opening new markets. And the U.S., because I think, frankly, politics on both the left and the right, we've gotten scared of trade agreements, and so we're not playing anymore.
As a result, U.S. commodities go into other markets much more expensive than goods from countries that have a free trade agreement with that same market. NAFB contributed to that report, and now here's Brian German with more Ag News.
The California Foundation for Agriculture in the Classroom provides a variety of resources to educators looking to incorporate farm lessons into the curriculum. Executive Director Judy Culbertson describes some of the areas of impact for the foundation.
Traditionally, our most common teacher is a K-8 teacher, and that's a teacher who has an individual classroom where they can include agriculture in many different subject areas. We also, though, provide curriculum for high school level students in chemistry and in English and different subject areas. But we have found that more and more high school ag programs are using our resources. But also a lot of the FFA chapters are doing outreach to their local elementary school. And what better way than to have our materials that they can provide to the elementary teachers and or students? It's just a real win-win.
Researchers are taking a multi-year look at fungicide evaluations for managing gray mold and powdery mildew in strawberries. Field research manager at the Cal Poly Strawberry Center, Kyle Blauer, highlighted some of his trial work during the recent strawberry field day.
As far as like the products that we look at, you know, it's a wide range of experimental products, you know, registered, organic, and conventional products. And this year I tried to group all the products in trials of one being, you know, all the registered products and then the other ones being more the experimental coated products. And the data that I presented at field day was just on the registered product ones. So typically what we see in these trials is the conventional products have much more efficacy than the softer biological ones. But one organic product actually showed really strong efficacy against the non-treated control. And this trial, this is OSO, as a max label rate separated from the non-treated control at 6 days after harvest. And it was good to see that OSO performed well, because typically in these trials, we don't see the organic products really performing that well compared to the non-treated control for Botrytis gray mold. They do seem to have better efficacy against powdery mildew. But just in terms of Botrytis, there's only really a couple products that have shown some kind of efficacy against Botrytis fruit rot on strawberries in the parameters that we're testing these products.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
GMOs? Genetically engineered? Bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages to let you know the product or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, 172 bushels per acre of corn and 49.7 bushels per acre of beans. That's the Pro Farmer National Corn and Soybean Estimates for the 2023 crop. Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady has the highlights.
Ohio's kind of a hit or miss state, but this year it was a real rock star. And I thought that the Ohio corn crop was the best crop that we saw on the eastern side through the week. We were in many fields where it really showed distress. And just over the past 5 days since I've been gone on crop tour, ears were hanging in some of those fields and stuff like that. So a crop that was really pushed hard over the past week here.
Of course, those numbers are in a snapshot in time. And the final yield can and will change between now and when the harvest takes place.
You know, what's surprising is some of these beans, except for when you get into the moderate soil, you know, they're still holding in there. They're still looking pretty green. But, you know, you see those pockets out there. And I think as we go forward, if we don't get some rain, those spots are only going to get bigger.
That's longtime scout Brian Kaufman from Iowa, who says an early harvest may be on the horizon. Mike Zuzulo, president of Global Commodity Analytics, talked about his initial reaction to the harvest predictions.
Well, I think it'll jump out at the trade. I think the trade was very much like a bloodhound on the scent with the soybeans and the yield dropping. But I would say a week ago, right before the tour started, I heard a lot of talk and a lot of chatter about how the corn was already made, the yield wasn't going to change much. And then as the tour progressed into this past week, especially midweek when we got into Iowa, Minnesota, and parts of Nebraska, the trade started to realize that we are looking at a situation where the corn yield can indeed be hurt. I think these numbers did show that when you look at the range of yield from 170.3 to 173.7.
And he tells us about the soybean numbers.
Soybeans are even more wide open now in terms of yield potential loss than what the trade was probably thinking at the end of the week. And so when I look at, you know, 48.7 to 50.7, if you're on the low end and you're down at 48.7, you're going to have to ration a lot of demand to not be in a 150, 170, 175 carryover number at this stage of the game for 23-24 soybean ending stocks.
In other news, cost share programs included in the Farm Bill help farmers and ranchers tackle expensive projects. The many programs of the Farm Bill help farmers and ranchers improve the environment while producing food for the nation. Maryland Farm Bureau member Joanne Chasen says Farm Bill programs helped her when moving livestock to new land about 10 years ago.
Here in Maryland, we treasure the Chesapeake Bay, and therefore we have strict regulations on nutrient and natural resource management. I was required to fence out a pond on the property. This resulted in me also having to install a geothermal well-fed water fountain so that there would be a constant supply of water for the livestock. For a small operator as myself, this was a costly undertaking. It was incredibly helpful to work with NRCS, who cost-shared the project with me.
With the Farm Bill expiring, Jason says lawmakers need to act quickly to pass the next farm bill.
When faced with regulatory requirements that are indeed good for the environment, it often leads to costly projects. Farmers across the nation rely on cost share programs to help them meet the requirements that might otherwise be cost prohibitive for them. And the current farm bill is set to expire in about a month. It's imperative that as soon as Congress returns in early September, that they prioritize the passage of the new farm bill.
She encourages all farmers and ranchers to tell their lawmakers about the importance of the Farm Bill.
Call, write, and email your congressmen and senators. My representatives have told me that they want to hear from their constituents and that firsthand experiences and personal stories make the biggest impact. Keep it honest and real, be yourself, and just tell your story. And the bottom line is we all have to work together to get this over the finish line.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, dairy experts and government officials are gathered in Carmel, Indiana, where last week saw the beginning of the hearings on USDA's Federal Milk Marketing Order, or FMMO. Dairy producers are making their case for changes to the pricing program. National Milk Producers Federation's Senior Vice President of Membership Services and Strategic Initiatives, Chris Galen, discusses their modernization efforts.
Basically, they're going to be spending time with a judge in a setting where various parties within the dairy industry can talk about how they would like to see the milk pricing system changed. Those witnesses are then subject to cross-examination by USDA and others in the industry. Now, a lot of this is specifically focused on the federal milk marketing order system. So there are a number of initial proposals that were submitted to USDA that are not being considered because they are outside of the scope of what the federal order system can do. But what they will be focusing on are certain things that NMPF has brought to the table. In fact, they're looking at the question about milk composition and whether the federal order system and its formula for looking at milk components is proper, which in our view it's not, and it needs to be updated. Then they're also going to be looking at the make allowance issue, the issue of class one pricing, and class one and two price differentials. So there's a lot of different things that will be unpacked and discussed in much greater depth here at the end of the summer.
And Galen notes there will be time for others not taking part in the hearing to submit their perspective on this.
What USDA is doing is carving out time every Friday during this hearing to allow dairy producers to submit their perspective. And you don't have to be in person. It can be done via Zoom. So that information is available on the USDA's website that they are dedicating to this hearing.
Now, following USDA's initial presentations, the hearing will then launch into discussions on specific issues placed within the scope of the hearing. That includes milk composition, survey commodity products, Class 3 and Class 4 formula factors, the base Class 1 skim milk price, and Class 1 and Class 2 price differentials. After the conclusion, then there will be a period of time to respond to the testimony, followed by a USDA draft decision, then more discussion, and ultimately a vote among dairy farmers on a final proposal. But that vote is not expected to take place until sometime in the second half of 2024. And Forever Feed Technologies announced a multi-million dollar investment from a renowned group of dairy and ag leaders to develop sustainable automated indoor growing feed mills. The climate-controlled technology will greatly reduce water, land usage, and methane emissions in helping the industry reach its goal of being climate neutral by 2050. The new investment funds will go towards building the largest and most reliable controlled environmental mills capable of feeding thousands of animals. In turn, they note that will help producers to responsibly expand their operations to meet the growing demands. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The facts on internet use on farms may surprise you. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The USDA's 2023 Technology Use on Farms report found that the areas that have the highest internet use aren't anywhere near the Silicon Valley. Tony Dorn of the National Agricultural Statistics Service explains some of the findings.
As far as the states, the New England states lead the nation with 98% of farms with internet access. New Mexico and Arizona have the least percentage of farms with the internet. New Mexico had the smallest percentage at 55%. We also collect information about ways that farmers connect to the internet, including if they own or use a desktop or laptop, if they own or use a smartphone or have a tablet or other portable wireless computer or some other type of computer. So as far as that information goes, one of the highlights is the smartphone usage, which has gone up. In 2023, we see that 82% of farmers only use a smartphone to connect to the internet on the farm. And this was an increase from 77% in 2021. Of the different types of internet, 51% of the farms have broadband access and access the internet through broadband, either DSL, cable, fiber optics, or something else. And as far as dial-up, 2% of the farmers reported accessing internet that way. As far as cellular, that came in at 75%, and satellite came in at 23%, and 2% for others. So really, as you might expect, cellular was the most popular way to access the internet at 75%, and broadband connections were 51% of the way farmers access internet on the farms.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen. Farmers facing drought this year will likely collect crop insurance. The tax law allows crop insurance proceeds to be deferred if the farmer had a business practice of deferring crop sales. But there's a limitation on the amount that can be deferred. That limit will likely be in play this year. I'll get back to the report in a moment, but I want you to know that Schrader Real Estate and Auction Company has sold farm to ranch land and farm equipment in 40 states. Learn how the Schrader family can help your family. Visit SchraderAuction.com. That's S-C-H-R-A-D-E-R Auction.com. If you collect crop insurance proceeds this year, how much can you defer into next year for tax purposes? The amount that you can defer is limited to the portion related to crop damage. The portion associated with price is not deferrable. Crop damage is based on yield loss times the crop's base price before you plant the crop. If the price at harvest equals or is greater than the base price, all of your crop insurance proceeds are related to yield and will be fully deferrable. However, if harvest price is lower than the base price, the portion of the crop insurance proceeds related to the drop in price is based solely on the price drop. That means that at least some of the crop insurance proceeds won't be deferrable. You won't have to calculate the numbers. Your crop insurance provider usually reports the amount of price and yield loss when the proceeds are sent out. This year, it's looking likely that most crop insurance proceeds will be a result of a price drop and not a price increase at harvest. So don't be surprised if you won't be able to defer all of your crop insurance proceeds. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen.
USDA's market news mobile app continues to build. The latest edition of the USDA's market news mobile app has rolled out, building upon previous versions. USDA's Rod Bain talks with Taylor Cox of the Agricultural Marketing Service in this next report.
USDA's market news mobile app has progressed and expanded its capabilities.
We started in February of 2022, and that version included our livestock and poultry reports. So that was over 800 reports containing commodities from cattle to grains, et cetera. We came out in June of 2022 with version 2 and expanded that to include cotton and tobacco, dairy, and specialty crops. Be able to search commodity areas, market types. We added some features where you can save your favorites, subscribe, etc., making it very easy for end users to use this application.
Agricultural Marketing Service Associate Deputy Administrator Taylor Cox says the most recent version of the app introduced this summer continues the expansion of available data and functions.
Version 3 expanded again for more commodities, which included organic retail market reports and international market reports.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The importance of Farm Bill programs. Cost share programs included in the Farm Bill help farmers and ranchers tackle expensive projects. The many programs of the Farm Bill help farmers and ranchers improve the environment while producing food for the nation. Maryland Farm Bureau member Joanne Chasen says Farm Bill programs helped her when moving livestock to new land about 10 years ago.
Here in Maryland, we treasure the Chesapeake Bay, and therefore we have strict regulations on nutrient and natural resource management. I was required to fence out a pond on the property, and this resulted in me also having to install a geothermal well-fed water fountain so that there would be a constant supply of water for the livestock. For a small operator as myself, this was a costly undertaking. It was incredibly helpful to work with NRCS, who cost-shared the project with me.
With the Farm Bill expiring, Chasen says lawmakers need to act quickly to pass the next Farm Bill. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
From the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, I'm Mark Oppold with today's Bottom Line Report, brought to you by Helena. Farm Progress Show celebrates its 70th anniversary as gates open today. After a very hot and dry week across most of the country last week, 80-85 degree highs this week are perfect for this show and state fairs that continue Minnesota and Nebraska for two. Autonomous equipment continues to expand at the show. But for the first time, we're seeing more all-electric or hybrid-powered implements emerging. But there's history here as well. Gleaner Combines celebrate their 100th anniversary, taking us back to agriculture in the 1920s. Crop condition updates reflect the extreme heat from last week. Pro farmer participants repeatedly stated that they could see added stress in corn, especially day-to-day in their tour last week. All that said, we see December corn struggling past that 505-507 level, but November soybeans can move past 1420-1425 this week, maybe even by the close today. This is the Bottom Line Report. Helena says improve your fertilizer efficiency and increase your yield potential for next season right now. Visit HelenaAgri.com to learn more. From the Farm Progress Show, I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
It seems like it was just a couple of days since... And now already... It's back to school time, and for many parents and students, it's back to pack a lunch for school time. So what can we do to make sure that lunch we pack for our kids to take to school is packed with decent nutrition, won't make our kids sick? We'll hear from experts on both counts on this edition of Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford. For many, many parents, back to school time is a time of great, great celebration.
It's the most wonderful time.
My goodness, where did this come from? Ooh.
With the kids back to schooling and mothers carpooling and teachers so dear.
So dear. Oh my.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Oh my goodness, that's enough to make you want to cancel school again. But anyway, many parents are preparing so-called brown bag lunches for their kids to take to school, even though most food safety experts do not recommend actually using brown paper bags.
Unless you're using things in your lunch that are totally non-perishable.
You know, apples, peanut butter sandwiches, granola bars, chips, things like that. This from Meredith Carruthers, a food safety expert with the Agriculture Department's Meat and Poultry Hotline. She says even with a frozen gel pack in a brown paper bag, it's not insulated. And so...
The biggest concern is that those foods aren't going to stay cold enough, and therefore bacteria that can cause foodborne illness are going to start multiplying potentially by the time you go to eat your lunch. And then if you eat your lunch with that bacteria on it that has started to grow, you can potentially get sick, and that's what we don't want.
So try to use a good insulated lunchbox or bag with a frozen cold source. Meredith says with that as a starting point,
you can pretty much take anything for lunch. You just have to make sure you're storing it properly until you're ready to eat it.
Keeping it below 40 degrees. Meredith says that needs to be done even if you're taking leftovers, things like leftover pizza. It's got to be kept cold. So what about, I got an idea, what about taking a chicken leg, you know, something like that, freezing that, using that item as the cold source in the lunchbox? So Meredith, how about that idea? Ack, that's your reaction? Ack, what's wrong with that?
The big concern is that when that food starts to thaw, those foods will thaw from the outside in. The outer layers of that food, any foodborne illness bacteria that might be present, start to get exposed to that air temperature. And if it's not below 40 degrees, that bacteria can start to multiply. They can multiply to a point of creating toxins that are then heat resistant, won't be killed by reheating, or if your child is eating that frozen food cold, it won't be good and could potentially get them sick.
So keep that in mind. And also, she says we might want to put into that lunchbox or bag some hand sanitizer or hand wipes. So safety, that's one big consideration for that school lunch. The other big one, what foods to pack? Now, years ago, that used to be pretty easy. Maybe a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, chips, an apple, a cookie, that was it. But these days, when we're trying to decide what to pack for our child's lunch, there can be a whole list of things to consider, including cost, of course, and what he or she likes to eat and won't throw out, what's convenient to pack in there and safe to pack. But
maybe number one on that list ought to be nutrition.
Now, Kansas State University Extension food and nutrition expert Sandy Proctor would key in on nutrition, providing the needed calories while also including vitamins, minerals, not too much fat, considering the problems with obesity that many children have. It's a lot trickier job today to pack a good, nutritious lunch.
The truth is, nutrition really matters as we're trying to help them achieve their best in school.
And so here are some things to consider when we parents pack that school lunch.
Make it nutritious. Aim for one or two servings of a whole grain or some type of complex carbohydrate, 2 to 3 ounces of a lean meat or protein, and 2 servings of a fruit or fruit and vegetable, and then that serving of dairy. And if you can get all of those components in that brown bag lunch, you're really going to add a strong push of nutrition into your child's day.
So we parents have to be creative while also keying in on nutrition, which Sandy Proctor says is more important than most of us think.
It's not fluff. They need it. They're going to do a lot better on tests and all those things that we're testing them on if they have some good, sound nutrition.
Which, Sandy says, is true not only for our kids, but for us too, as school gets going for real this year. No, let's not get carried away here. This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford, heading for the principal's office again and reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do we have GMOs? Actually, we've been modifying crops for thousands of years to prevent crop loss from pest and weather damage, to grow more food on less land, even to improve nutrition. Today, GMOs are developed for the same reasons. With genetic engineering, scientists can change and improve crops more easily and quickly. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
Hey everyone, welcome to today's interview segment. I have with us again Anna Genasi with Stanislaus County Farm Bureau. Anna, thanks for taking the time to chat with me again today.
Always, Danielle. Thank you for having us.
So today is a unique episode in the sense that we're talking all about the Farm Bureau Foodies topic, and this was actually the very first topic that you and I ever talked about when we started these sort of monthly episodes with Stanislaus County Farm Bureau. So I'm really excited today to talk about, you know, how it started and the growth and some of the relationships that you have built along the way and to see, you know, what you guys have in store for the future. So, if folks missed that episode about a year and a half ago, maybe even 2 years ago, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody what exactly Farm Bureau Foodies is?
Yeah, thanks, Danielle. So not that anybody wants to talk about it, but during COVID, when we were, you know, as a Farm Bureau, we do host a lot of events. And so during that time, you know, obviously those normal gatherings weren't happening. Mm-hmm. And the team here at Farm Bureau, we were sitting down and having lunch together and kind of talking through ways to keep people engaged during mm-hmm. that kind of shutdown time. And what came out of that is this idea to highlight our members, our local farmers, ranchers, and dairymen by connecting them with the food that we eat, mm-hmm. and specifically the food that's being featured at local restaurants. So what a great way to like give a shout out to restaurants who are sourcing locally, to chefs who, you know, see the value in sourcing local fresh commodities. And then obviously from a Farm Bureau perspective, telling that great story of our farmer, rancher, or dairyman, because it seems, in Anna's opinion, mm-hmm. That it's an area that we don't, if we don't get out in front of it, other organizations, non-ag organizations, mm-hmm. kind of fill in the dialogue that don't always paint the most positive picture of California agriculture. And so being able to tell the stories of our local members and kind of the awesome work that they're doing has just been such a blessing. That's where it all started. Mm. We've actually successfully completed, we did kind of two pilot episodes, and then this year we're on track to do 6 episodes a year.
Wow. Major growth.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. So what have been some of the operations, the farmers and ranchers, as well as the businesses that you've been able to, you know, spotlight and build those relationships with? I think the first one that we talked about had some sort of almond ice cream, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. So Stanislaus County, our top two commodities are almonds and dairy. So it was just fitting that our first two episodes highlighted those commodities. So we did an interview with Fiscalini Cheese, farmstead cheese that's, you know, the cows are taken care of, milked, and the cheese is made all on the same property. So we had the pleasure of obviously seeing their beautiful faces, the cows, and then interviewing one of the third generation family members that helped maintain that dairy today. Then we also did Robert's Ferry Nut Company. So their kind of secret sauce in their milkshakes is using fresh almond butter. Mm. So those were just really great opportunities for us. It's the first time I serve as the host of these. It's the first time I've been in that role in front of the camera. So it was great for us to be able to do those with such warm and welcoming people. And then moving into 2023, we decided to really take a stab at this, and our goal is 6 episodes a year. We do this 100% via fundraising. Hmm. So these episodes obviously cost some money, right, to film and produce. And, you know, we feel really strongly that it not come out of the Farm Bureau budget. And so I've been working on fundraising, and we now have secured all of the fundraising that we need in order to do 6 full episodes this year, 3 of which we've already done are already out. And the 4th one is scheduled to be filmed next week.
What have been the 3, if you will, just briefly go over the topics that you have covered?
So the first one this year was kind of unique. We featured squab, which is, farm-raised birds, right?
Yes.
And I didn't know this until I started doing some research, but Modesto is the home of a squab cooperative.
Yes.
So growers, you know, hold themselves internally to these like really high standards, and if you meet those standards, you can be a part of the cooperative. And then the cooperative has actually the processing facility in which those birds are prepared, you know, to be sent off to
grocery stores and restaurants and whatnot. So we featured squab. And then next, probably pretty known, is Hilmar cheese. Mm-hmm. We had a really great time with them. We kind of took it old school in that instead of doing like a fancy meal, we just did a grilled cheese sandwich.
Ooh,
and how that can
that.
Be, I know, right? And how it's so good when you use good cheese.
Yes.
So that was super yummy. And we had the opportunity to feature all of the amazing work that they do in terms of ag education. Mm-hmm. They have a really hands-on display. They invite classrooms of kiddos throughout the year to come and like learn about dairy cows and dairy and how cheese is made. Mm-hmm. So we were able to weave that in. And then for the month of June and July, we worked with Crystal Creamery. They're right here in downtown Modesto. And they do everything from, you know, butter to ice cream to milk. And because June and July are National Dairy Month mm-hmm. and National Ice Cream Month, we decided to do the ice cream. And
oh,
we
that's
did
perfect.
We did some taste testing of their new flavors. So we just had a fantastic time, of course, interviewing the dairyman who is really focused on sustainability and just being super clever in terms of what he's feeding his cows and their mixed rations. And then even going as far as as installing like solar panels so that they can be self-sufficient in terms of energy use. Mm. So it's really just, it's been really great because people in agriculture are doing amazing things.
Yeah.
It's just not getting out in front of the public. And that's right. really our goal with Farm Bureau Foodies is, of course, I want agriculturalists to enjoy the videos. But for me, more importantly, it's consumers. I want folks right. to have an appreciation for the people who help put the food on their table.
This was just part one of my conversation with Stanislaus Kenny, Farm Bureau's Director of Communication and Education, Anna Genasi, talking all about Farm Bureau Foodies. If you'd like to find out more information about Farm Bureau Foodies, you can head on over to the Facebook page or contact Stanislaus County Farm Bureau. Stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news after this short break.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. Record low number of federal wage and hour investigations of farms. The Economic Policy Institute says employers routinely underpay farm workers, among other workplace violations. But federal investigations into problems like these have dropped to an all-time low. The Institute says that's likely because of funding and staffing constraints. A new report says Congress must increase funding for labor standards enforcements to protect farm workers. Since 2000, the Labor Department's Wage and Hour Division has seen investigations drop by more than 60%. The division only has 810 investigators to protect all 165 million workers in the U.S. That means fewer than 1% of farm employers get investigated every year. From 2000 to 2022, H-2A visa program violations accounted for almost half of back wages and civil money penalties owed by farm employers. The EPA wants Congress to provide resources for strong investments in farm worker protections. They also want stiffer fines imposed on chronic offenders. An AFB contributed to that report.
Registration is now open for the 31st Annual Nutrient Management Conference. The event is hosted by the California Department of Food and Agriculture's Fertilizer Research and Education Program and Western Plant Health. This year's conference will be held at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in Modesto, November 8th and 9th. The Nutrient Management Conference will also include a pre-conference tour of Duarte Nursery in Houston on November 7th, though limited space is available and early registration is encouraged. The event brings together industry professionals and academic researchers to learn about and share the latest research and innovative management practices for fertilizing materials. This year's agenda includes information on irrigation and nitrogen management in carrots, industrial hemp, and olives, nitrogen and phosphorus management in recycled almond orchards, and nitrate leaching reduction in vegetable production. There will also be a panel discussion on the challenges of nitrogen and water management in a wet year, as well as workshops on pump efficiency testing and salinity management. More information about the conference is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Severe heat waves kill hundreds of Americans every year. Some estimates have that number in the thousands.
The list of the most vulnerable during a heat wave is quite long.
Dr. Christy Ebi of the University of Washington says that list includes pregnant women, very young children, adults over 65, people with chronic medical conditions, outdoor workers, and the list goes on. But Dr. Ebi says the effects of more frequent and more severe heat waves go beyond posing possible medical problems for some people.
We also need to think about environment. We're talking about what's going on in Hawaii right now. You have periods of very high temperatures. I live in the Pacific Northwest. That goes along with drought, that goes along with wildfires. That affects air quality, and so you get these compounding and cascading risks that affect people, but also affect livelihoods.
And she says until we do something about climate change, the heat situation is very likely to keep getting worse. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at Agnet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Agnet News Hour from Agnet West. Agnet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.